and welcome to the Chengdu Gaming Federation podcast. My name is Charlie, and I'm joined here with Austin.
Hey, what's up?
Today we're talking about probably the most popular game in China, and maybe by extension, the most popular game on the internet, which has to be PUBG, has to be PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Yeah, I mean, it's like broken records with
number of players on concurrent players, like 2.5 million or something.
Yeah, I was just looking that up right before we recorded this. The peak players is 2.5 million, and right now, as of us recording this podcast, it is 5 p.m. in the afternoon on Sunday in China. So that means it's 5 a.m. in America.
York?
And it has, yeah, on the West Coast, and it has 2.2 million players right now.
Yeah, that's nuts.
So it's 300,000 players off of the all-time high.
Now,
and this is at 5 o'clock in the morning in the States.
Right. I did look it up. China makes up about 60% of Steam's user base now.
Oh, no, that's definitely not true.
As of, like, this last year.
Most Chinese players are... No, China has almost as many users as the United States. Almost, not quite as many. And that, obviously, like Europe and Australia and all these other countries, like China is like a minority.
Like, I think England makes up like 20% of it.
I don't know. But I know that the United States has more Steam users than China does. But in any case, there are 2.2 million people playing PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds right now. Presumably, those people mostly are in China. The game is really big in Korea, and it's big in other places as well.
It's a Korean developer, Bluehole.
Yeah, Korean developer, Bluehole. PlayerUnknown is an American guy, though. Have you heard much about him?
Brendan Green, right?
Yeah, exactly, Brendan Green.
He, like, dabbled in game development while he was living in Brazil for about 5 years, and then, like, worked on various mods, like H1Z1, King of the Kill, and stuff, and then...
King of the Kill.
And King of the Hill?
Yeah, King of the Kills. Right, so he's the pioneer of the Battle Royale genre.
Yeah.
So PlayerUnknown Battleground is very similar to Battle Royale.
And he was like cashing unemployment checks living at his parents' house when he moved back to America, I think. Went from that to like making this significant amount of money on PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds.
It's a pretty interesting story, the origin of this game and of PlayerUnknown himself. We'll talk about that as we get further into this podcast. For anyone who's not familiar with this game, it is a first-person shooter game. It's been called an unstoppable juggernaut. It has sold over 15 million units since launching into early access in March of this year. So it's only been available for about 6 months.
6 months?
Yeah, about 6 months. Largest concurrent player count on Steam by a considerable margin.
Kind of came out of left field and
totally.
Like caught the world by storm.
It really did.
Like, crazy, like just blew up.
Well, you know, prior to this game becoming really popular, we had already seen Rust be really popular and Ark was very popular. And these kind of survival games were really popular, indie games. And then PUBG just came along and just like buried everything else. Yeah, blew them out of the water.
Buried.
Not only did they get so big, but they also just have really experienced a global worldwide success. And one of the reasons why we wanted to record this podcast is because a lot of people are talking about PUBG and its relationship to China specifically, since there have been a lot of rumors about the game getting banned in China recently, since an organ of the Chinese government has come out and spoken against PUBG and against the entire survival genre. So we'll talk about that in this podcast.
Yeah.
But the game is a first-person shooter, right? For anyone who hasn't played the game, can you explain? It's definitely... Well, no, it's not first-person.
Third-person, first-person. But I think predominantly people prefer playing it in third-person, allowing you to get a better view of things. So basically, you start out airdropping into an island with 100 people and... choose a location to kind of go on to and start scavenging for items. So it's kind of got that like aspect of like those survival games and stuff of having to go out and explore the environment and like, you know, gather armor, gather like resources and stuff.
Yeah, it's a last man standing shooter. The Steam page says players must fight to locate weapons and supplies in a massive 8x8 kilometer island to be the lone survivor. It's pretty huge. Yeah, you can find vehicles.
If you don't get a vehicle, you kind of get fucked.
Right. So, but the major mechanic of the game really, I mean, you don't necessarily need a vehicle, but anyway, the major mechanic is you're trying to stay alive as long as you can, and you are up against up to 99 other players who are trying to kill you. And also, there are circles on the island, which get smaller and smaller as time goes on. And if you're outside of the circle...
health starts to drain.
Yeah, then your health starts to drain and you get killed.
And did the circle, like, if you're outside the blue zone, in the blue zone or whatever, starts to... at first, like the first round or whatever, it doesn't do a lot of damage. You don't have a lot of pressure to like outrun it, and it moves really slow. But in the later ones, it's like, I mean, you can't run as fast as it like shrinks, I mean, and the damage it does to you is much more in the later rounds. You don't want to be outside.
It's such a brilliant mechanic. The game is just really special and unique for so many reasons. You know, you and I had just recently played the game for our first time not long ago, and we've been playing kind of regularly since then.
It's a little rough around the edges, but it's just like so fun, fun. I mean, it's like that first time we played, I don't think I've really played anything that kind of made me feel that kind of sense of urgency, I guess, that you get in the later parts of the game. And like, I don't know, it's
kind of
exciting.
You know, I heard someone describe it as not a shooter, but more as a thriller. And I think that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, I mean, you're constantly tense. There's a perpetual sense of tension because you don't know where other people are. And literally, people could be like right behind the door you're about to open.
Yeah, like that time that I walk into like...
Describe that one time so you're... like, so describe it.
I don't think I had like seen a single person yet. And it was down to what, like under 30 people or something. And I was like... doing fine. You know, I had good gear. And then I'm walking up. We had been playing together, I think, and you had just died a little bit earlier. And then I was like, I think I hear someone talking. Just walk into this building and then see a guy just crouching there. Freak out, panic, start shooting, completely miss him, shooting like a circle around him, and then get shot in the face and die. And like panic in a moment, you know, just thinking that like, I'm fine. I'm safe. I thought I heard someone's voice, and then I wasn't safe at all. You know,
you're in like a fairly desolate place of the map, and then there's like a shed. It's like a shack
in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, right. And then so you open the door, and like you panic immediately. You're just freaking out, yelling, and it's just like a crazy gunfight, and you get shot and killed right there. And that's like how it can go. You can die. I mean, immediately in this game at any time, you're never safe anywhere. Matches can last, I would say, up to like maybe 30, 40 minutes maximum. And it's just constant tension. And everybody's trying to win and to be the last remaining survivor. You came really close that one time.
Yeah.
You were the second person. Yeah.
Second. And then once again, I panicked. I saw the guy. He didn't see me. He was running into a smoke grenade I had just thrown. And I knew where I was. Then I started fumbling around with like switching my weapons and couldn't like draw my weapon in time.
The tension is just amazing. I mean, when you're at, you know, it's just huge pressure. So, and it's interesting because in China, you know, I really wanted to take the opportunity to talk about what this game is like in China, right? Because we're in China playing this game, and I've played it once at home, but every other time we've gone to an internet bar.
I mean,
and you and I have gone to internet bars to play this game. And so it's a really unique, interesting experience because I have not been to internet bars in China for years.
Yeah. I mean, it's really like probably like the number one game to see people playing. Like it's probably surpassed
for
like
sure.
LOL and stuff. Like we went into that one Wangba that like is downstairs from your place, and it was every single computer on in there.
Right. So what a lot of these places do, for anyone who's not in China, we can explain kind of how this works. So there are a lot of people in China who don't have computers of their own. They just have a mobile phone. And so if you want to play League of Legends or PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, you would go to an internet bar. Internet bars are everywhere, in every city, every village, every town in China. So pretty much if you're in a major city, there's probably like 10 internet bars within like two blocks of where you are. Like they're extremely common.
Yeah, there's one in this building.
And right.
There's like two or three, right? Like 2 minute walk from my house.
Right. So there's a lot of them. Usually you pay a couple bucks an hour. I mean, it depends on the conditions of the place, but they're like inexpensive.
The place that we've gone to a few times, I think, is like 5 RMB an hour or something, which is like less than $1 an hour.
Right. So they're inexpensive. The place which we've gone to recently has a PUBG section. Yeah. So they have computers.
They've got the maps and above
exactly.
It.
So they've got
slogan translated to Chinese.
They've got computers which are set up just for PUBG because the game is not well optimized. So the system requirements are pretty high, and even with this specific PUBG, you know, place inside the internet bar, there's still like the settings are put down. Like
the computer I played on the other day, I was able to run it smoothly on like pretty high settings.
Nice.
Yeah, but it like depends on which computer you get at. Like every computer's different at that place.
Interesting. So on the wall, as you mentioned, there's a map of the PUBG island, and everything is labeled in Chinese. And there's also a big sign. The slogan for PUBG is pretty interesting. So if you are the last remaining person and you win, then you get first place. And it says, winner, winner, chicken dinner on the screen.
Why do you think they chose that?
Maybe just to be quirky and do something memorable. And if so, it really worked.
Yeah, definitely worked. And they've got that. How do you say that in Chinese?
Da ji da li jin wan chi ji. Yeah, that's how it is. Da ji da li jin wan chi ji. So it's winner, winner, chicken dinner. Like literally like translated into Chinese, but it's translated really well. And it rhymes, you know, just like winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Yeah.
And it just sounds really cool. But this slogan has also become like a meme in Chinese gaming culture.
Yeah.
You know, like we're in a WeChat group of people playing PUBG, and the name of the WeChat group is this slogan in Chinese. So it's like a commonly used catchphrase in Chinese. And it's amazing that you have a catchphrase in international gaming audience, which is then translated into Chinese, and it can simultaneously take on both of these societies at once, which is amazing because normally in the gaming industry, you see big hits outside China and then you see big hits inside China, and you rarely see overlap between the two of them.
Rare.
And PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is like a really unique moment in the gaming industry where China and the Western world are kind of like aligned, like both playing the same game kind of together.
Yeah, but I mean, I have heard a lot of complaints about like Chinese players and stuff, but like about them like playing on the North American servers or whatever. But I don't think there aren't actually any Chinese servers. They're just Asian servers. Right.
Well, yeah, and the game exists in a gray zone, just like Steam does.
Yeah.
And this is why there's been a lot of discussion about whether or not it'll be banned, or, you know, whether or not Steam is even safe inside China.
Right.
But I have read recently that Chinese media was reporting that Chinese people were catching other people inside internet bars cheating in PUBG, and they were verbally and physically attacking them.
Now, I haven't I've played for maybe 5-10 hours at most, you know, so far since I got the game, and I have not seen any cheating so far.
Well, I mean, if there was cheating, you probably wouldn't see it, right? It'd be easy to not see.
I've like not really encountered a lot of people. I've not like what I've done when I have encountered people has seemed relatively fair.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I have not noticed any cheating, but it is encouraging to see that Chinese players, when confronting other people cheating, you know, physically confront them. There are actually videos on YouTube and on Youku of this happening inside internet bars. So, I mean, that's kind
of
encouraging.
Did you watch any of the videos?
Yeah, I watched one of the videos. It's like a guy comes over another guy and he's like
beats him over the head or something.
Yeah, yelling at him, and then like it becomes physical. So that is encouraging to see, but a lot of Western players when confronting this news of China maybe banning PUBG, have been like celebrating, you know, they're like,
which I think is terrible, you know, like, I mean, like you said, I think people outside of China assume that like when they encounter people cheating or whatever, blame like all Chinese people. But I don't think that's necessarily the case. There are people here that are like standing up and like being upset about like other players within China behaving this way.
Yeah.
And it's not as if like, you know, people in other countries don't cheat either. So I don't think it's necessarily like the norm. I have not experienced it in the like period of time that I've played here.
I haven't either. I've just had pretty enjoyable experiences playing the game. Although it is an early access game, it is pretty rough around the edges. I wish that it was a little bit more polished. And like I said to you, I just got a Switch recently and I've been playing Mario Odyssey and Zelda Breath of the Wild. And
it's not really a fair comparison.
Well,
I mean, Blue Hole
is not totally unfair. I mean, they're different types of games.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're different in a lot of ways, but they're both like some of the biggest games like in the gaming industry right now.
Yeah, but Blue Hole is like a 10-year-old company or something, and they have like 2 PC releases before PUBG, which were MMORPGs. So they're not like, I mean, like Nintendo is more than twice as old, has like plenty of like veteran developers working on working on things like Mario and stuff that have been in the industry, you know. Like,
yeah, the reason why I make the point though is because these Nintendo games have so much polish, and PUBG has like no polish. It's like the most it's like the most unpolished game ever.
Like, they're talking about a vaulting update or whatever, which I think would be great, being able to actually climb over something in front of you, but like right now as it is, there's like a window in front of you,
it's so goofy,
trying to jump in there, and you're like, I should be able to get in there, it's like waist height, but I can't fucking get into this building right in front of me.
Yeah,
so like that'll be a good update, and we'll, you know, help round it out, but I think the game is a long ways off before it gets any certain level of like polish. And I think even when they like do an official release of it, like, or whatever, it's still not going to be comparable to something like Zelda.
Well, the official release is coming in December of 2017, along with the Xbox One launch. So the
Xbox One launch.
That's right.
Hmm.
So the official release is very soon. It's not far away. It's about a month away, actually.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what comes with that. There are, I think, going to be 3 maps in the final version.
Really?
There's the island, there's a desert map, and then I think there's a snow map.
Oh, that's exciting. That's kind of cool. Yeah. I didn't know about that. That's pretty cool.
I feel like the island is so central to the Battle Royale theme.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you have Battle Royale and it's not on an island, like, how does that work exactly? I mean...
What is that movie... Tremors or whatever, you got like giant sand worm beasts that like if you go too far in the desert, is that how they're like, they're stuck there because of sandworms?
I'm curious also, what stops you from just like running to the edge of the map? And then what happens at the end of the map? I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But the full release of PUBG is coming pretty soon. That'll be interesting to see what effect that has.
It's like 2 months, less than 2 months, right?
Well, 1 month, December 2017. Yeah, it's a month from now. So that'll be interesting.
You think it'll get pushed back?
No, I don't think it'll get pushed back. I think that they could call it a full release and still do pretty fine. I mean, the game has been killing it in early access, and the game clearly has flaws and bugs and whatnot.
They continue to work on the game well after its release, because like there's a lot more, I think, that could be, it could be continued to like be improved upon.
Well, it's amazing because like the Star Wars Battlefront game comes out, Battlefield 1 comes out. New Call of Duty games have been constantly coming out, and PUBG is just like
killing it, going
like way beyond all of these. And these are like some of the most, you know, the largest, most influential, most like well equipped.
They're polished. They look and play well, you know. But like PUBG's just like, nah, we got this. You can't jump over that window, but like, you know, you can.
Pretty amazing how just like an independent developer like this just comes out with this game, which is such a big hit, especially in like the shooter space.
What a great name for the company too, Blue Hole. Every time I read that,
sounds so dirty. Wrong. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't sound great. Also, I mean, Player Unknown's Battlegrounds is like what? That's like a mouthful. You know,
yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of odd features around this game, but
that also seems a little bit like egotistical to just be like, yeah, this is my battleground.
Well, it's like Sid Meier's Civilization or something, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a game designer who has the rights.
Like Sid Meier, you know, not like...
Well, Sid Meier started out as like not a world famous guy, and they were still Sid Meier games then.
Yeah. We'll see if Brendan Green turns into that.
Dude, he already is that, man. There's like Rolling Stone articles about him.
Yeah, but he's only got the one game right now.
Yeah, but the one game is bigger than any Civilization game.
That's true.
He's already there, man. I read a Rolling Stone article about him, which was published in April. That was a month after early access release of this game. Yeah, you release a game early access, and a month later
you're in
there's Rolling Stone articles written about you.
Wow.
Yeah, and now like the hottest game just has his name on it. I mean, Jesus. I mean, who knows? Anyway,
he started doing like mods like this for like Arma 3, right? Right.
So he got started as creator of the Battle Royale game mode found in Arma, and in H1Z1 King of the Kill.
Right.
And so he worked with Bluehole in Korea to make
this game. How did he get in touch with like a Korean developer?
That's a great question. And I think they probably got in touch with him, I'm guessing. He is an American guy who's like lived all around the world, in Ireland and Brazil and now South Korea. And he was making these mods, and I think that they got in touch with him.
Right.
Since he is like the most visible game designer. Yeah, working in this space. And it makes sense. I mean, in, you know, Asia, like Korea really knows what it's doing with these types of games.
Right.
So even before this, there was already like a lot of expertise and capital and, you know how and so on in Korea to do this. But I think it was just a couple weeks ago that people started talking about the PUBG ban in China.
Right. It was maybe not even 2 weeks, about a week ago, I think, that it came up.
Yeah.
It was like we started talking about it like maybe a day after we like played it, I think, is like when like I saw like all over WeChat and everything. It was coming up on Friends Moments and like people talking about the supposed ban.
Right. It's interesting because you and I have been following the game for a long time, pretty much since it's released, right? We know like how popular it is and what's going on, and we've been observing from afar. It wasn't until recently that we actually took the time to like play the game.
Yeah.
And then when we did, you know, we go to the internet bar and we're like, wow, holy shit, like everybody's playing this game here. Yeah. You know, I mean, a lot of people have been talking about the viral nature of PUBG, but to observe it is really kind of something different. It's amazing. But it was a recent statement from the State Administration of Press, Publication, Radio, Film, and Television, which declared that the gladiator-like mentality of the computer game deviates from the values of socialism and is deemed harmful to young consumers.
Yeah, although there are Chinese clones of it, I believe, out there that are like, you know, not getting censored or anything happening to them. I think a huge part of it is just that it's a popular foreign game.
Right. I think that's a big part of it, too. Yeah. You know, China really wants to keep foreign culture outside of China, whether it's games or movies or music or TV shows or anything. And once something gets really big and really popular in China, then that is an influential force which China wants to stop.
Now, Tencent did approach them, you know, for discussing business, but none of that news has gone public or not as to whether or not they'll actually cooperate together. But as of now, they're not.
I heard they wanted to buy the developer, which makes a lot of sense, which is something Tencent has done before. Tencent bought
total
Riot.
Tencent strategy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. League of Legends. What else? Quite a few games. Supercell.
Yeah.
Clash of Clans and so on. So, yeah.
Who's doing CSGO? It's not Tencent, right?
It's Perfect World.
Perfect World, right?
Yeah. So, but actually CSGO is another example. So, recently, obviously, PUBG is not banned in China as of now. So, we're recording this podcast on Sunday, November 5th. And as of now, the game's not blocked in China. Steam's not blocked. And so everybody's playing PUBG. But CSGO is an interesting example. And recently I noticed that the tone of the narrative around whether or not PUBG will get blocked in China has changed recently. And now I start seeing people who say it's unlikely to get blocked. And one of the principal arguments for saying that it's not going to get blocked is by looking at CSGO. So looking at Counter-Strike GO, which is a Valve-developed shooter game, that game is legally released in China. It's not a gray zone game like Steam or like PUBG. It's been officially passed through all the certification process in China, which is incredibly
onerous. They have to censor anything?
Yeah, so they did make minor modifications to the game. Basically, CSGO, as it normally exists, was not acceptable for the censors. So they made some kind of small changes to it. I'm kind of unclear on what those are.
Maybe blood or things like that.
Yeah, I mean, but basically mostly unchanged. So very minor changes. Very minor changes to pass the censors and then to get the game officially published
inside China.
How is
the game released here? People aren't playing it on are people playing it on Steam here? Are they playing on like, is there another like avenue to play the game legally?
They're not playing it on Steam. It's not published through Steam.
All right.
So but the point here is, though, that CSGO is officially released in China. This is a game where you're shooting people and trying to stay alive, right? It's not that different from PUBG, actually.
Right.
Is PUBG violent? Yes, it is. Is CSGO violent? Yes, it is, right? So they're pretty similar. So
but they're no Mad World or, like, Manhunt or anything like that, you know?
Yeah,
like,
it can get more violent.
There's much more violent games out there, for sure.
Yeah, there definitely are. So I think this is kind of encouraging. I mean, if you know, obviously if PUBG were to get banned here, that would be really terrible. I remember last week you were telling me, you're like, man, I just bought this game. Like, if it gets blocked now, you know, imagine how many millions of people would in China
outraged.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Would be outraged. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think they would be outraged because they know that it's not about the violence, because there's a million violent games which are popular here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. There are. It's, you know, clearly a like nationalistic pride, like protect China's, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? It's just like about like keeping China, China.
Right. So if PUBG were to launch officially, Bluehole would need to partner with a Chinese publisher and submit the game to the through the licensing process. So if it goes down that route, it's going to be difficult, maybe, but maybe not. I mean, it could be just like CSGO. It could be like minor changes. You know, you make the blood green or, you know, whatever, like you make some kind of whatever ridiculous change, puts it in the, you know, socialist values green zone.
I mean, we might have to like to continue playing it, might have to purchase it again at that point, right?
Hopefully not. That would not be ideal. But yeah, you're right. I mean, if the game is published in China, it will not be distributed through Steam. That is like 100% certainty.
And so like all of these people who have already bought the game early access and are playing on Steam are still going to be upset about this, right?
Yes. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. You know, I mean, look at like Rocket League. Okay. Rocket League is not like a totally fair comparison because you couldn't play the game in China before it was officially published. But that's a game which was very popular on Steam. It originated on Steam on the PC platform.
Right.
And Chinese publishers saw an opportunity with it, Tencent. And so they said, we're going to publish this game. They're putting it on Wii Game and it's being distributed that way. So who knows? I mean, it could be something like that. Obviously, all the people who've bought and purchased the game on Steam wouldn't be happy about losing that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's kind of a stretch. It's incredible to see now that people in China have Steam accounts.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like for a long time, for pretty much like as long as we've been recording this podcast, at least, Chinese people like pretty much weren't on Steam in huge numbers.
Yeah.
Didn't care about Steam that much because it was not like a big player in China. And now it's just because of this one game that Steam is like a major platform in China, because this is the only way you can play like the hottest game right now.
Yeah. Blown up. Everybody on Steam in China now.
Yeah, pretty incredible.
Everybody on Steam with their super large library of one game.
Yeah, so right, two. Exactly. Exactly, yeah. So, you know, like my girlfriend, Cassidy, is like a good example. She's on Steam. She's playing the game. She's like, oh, the game costs like 100 RMB,
yeah,
which is equivalent to like $18 or something. Like, that's what the game costs. Costs half as much here as it does in America, for example.
How much does it cost in America? Like, $30?
$30. $30. Yeah, it costs $30. I think the price is going to go up when it goes to full release, though.
Yeah, what do you think it'll be like?
It could be $60.
That's nuts, dude, for as like rough a game as it is. I mean, depending on what it's like.
Yeah, it might not be so rough, is one thing to say there. But another is that, hey, even if it's rough, like this is the game everybody's playing. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. This is like the hottest game, like no matter how, you know, rough it is.
Yeah, I mean, if it's got more maps and like more content, it seems like it'll be really cool, like at release, to like continue playing. I mean, I have like already feel like I've got my money's worth out of the one map.
Yeah, so me too. I wonder if
there's not like a lot of changes. I mean, there's like a few like weather changes or something. It's like foggy sometimes or like stuff. But I think weather changes and like dynamic weather and stuff could be cool, which they might add if they continue patching. But yeah, I don't know. I've definitely got my money's worth out of like the 100 RMB purchase.
It's inexpensive. You know, Ark did this though. When they launched, it was inexpensive in early access and it was buggy and kind of weird. When they went to full release, they upped the price to $60.
So, Ark's $60
yeah,
now?
Yeah. I think it's $60 now. That's right. Yeah. It got like so many negative reviews. Like so many negative reviews just for that. But I thought it was funny because I played the game for like 15 minutes and I was like, nope, not for me.
Out.
Yeah, exactly. Done with this.
I'm naked. And now I can't find my clothes. I'm done with this.
naked and can't find your clothes, I think, is Rust more than Ark. But I felt the same way about Rust too. I'm like, nope, not for me. Like, none of these games are for me. But it's funny now because I purchased the game, played it for 15 minutes, and now it's like a $60 game, which is in my library, which I really don't have much interest in going back to. But, you know, it's really interesting to think about what the future of PUBG might be. if it's going to continue to be a success overseas, if it's going to continue to be like the smash game in China, if it's going to be censored, if it's going to be published, because it seems like it's unlikely to just continue in this state indefinitely in China.
Yeah, something's going to happen. Probably.
Something's going to happen.
In like the next, I mean, maybe when it gets its full release shortly after that or something, you know, like it's continuing to grow. So I like at some point, right. Something's going to happen. And Tencent's not going to like stand by and like allow them to dominate. Like
yeah, this. I mean, it's I think a couple months is the window that we're looking at for some kind of major change, at least with PlayerUnknown Battleground in China. China. At least. Yeah, exactly. Anything else to say about PUBG before we wrap this up?
I mean, let's like maybe just touch upon like a few of our favorite moments in playing the game and like what's made it special for us. And like, and so, I mean, like I was the whole what brought up this topic, you know, was about multiplayer moments in gaming. And a huge part of that is these unscripted moments that you get when you say playing something like Battlefield or Battlefront or, you know, Rainbow Six Siege or something, these moments between other players. And I think it was really cool when we had that moment. There's that red zone when they start bombing. And
I mean, we've played Rainbow Six Siege together online for how many hours? Like tens of hours.
Yeah.
Have we ever had like one moment that was like that recent one?
I mean, like, I think we've had moments, but I don't think we've had anything like that. I feel like that's kind of... You need a larger battlefield and like a more players, something like Battlefield or something that allows for these moments to happen.
It seems like in something like Rainbow Six Siege or Call of Duty or whatever,
it's too tight.
You're always in the same types of situations over and over. You're like near field, like gunplay, like all the time, right?
I agree.
And this is not that much like unpredictability. Whereas with PUBG, it's like 100
players, massive play space with like, you know, just like vehicles and stuff strewn about. And like, you don't know like what sort of situations you're going to get into or how to prepare for them. How you like might not have a backpack. So you have to make a choice between like, do I carry this shotgun or do I carry like this rifle or whatever, you know? You don't know what's going to happen. And it leads to these unpredictable moments that are so different from, say, something like those scripted sequences in, like, the Uncharted series or something, which are fantastic and wonderful and fun to play, but they're the same every time you play. And that moment that we had, what was that, last week or whatever?
Yeah, so what happened, though, is basically, so there, as we described earlier, these circles which get smaller and you have to stay inside the circle or else you get electrocuted. In addition to that, there are also these like zones which get bombed on the map. And there you can pull up the map at any time and you can see your location on the island and you can see where the circles are and such. And when these bombing events happen, it's like a big red circle which appears on the map.
Right.
And you have to get outside of the circle or else you get bombed.
Right.
So the two of us, we were...
We dropped into like a small house, like a few houses, a small community, and we were well within the white circle and a good place to loot. So you and I both are like just going all over these houses, like up a third floor or something, just like looting, not really paying much attention. And then you call out to me.
I'm like, dude, we're like right in the middle of the bombing zone. Like I looked on the map and we're like right in the middle of the red zone. And you were outside of the building in a vehicle already.
Well, like as soon as you said that, I dipped down and I had like, we had found that buggy or whatever. We had backed up to the house. So by the time you said it, I was able to get outside and get in the front. And I'm already in a position to drive off waiting for you.
Right. You're just like parked outside waiting. I'm like running down the stairs. And
you're
then I jump in
there. Yeah. Be like, drive up. And there's like bombs going off like left and right of us. And one of them went off maybe like 10 feet in front of us.
We're going like full speed in the buggy. And like this is a massive explosion like right in front of us. And we just like drive right through it. It's just like a really exhilarating moment.
Super exciting. That was like, I don't know, dude. It's like something out of like an action movie or something.
That was a lot
and
of
you
fun.
Couldn't plan for that. You
right.
Know?
No, you couldn't. And I actually, prior to that, I had not even known like how the bombing worked. I didn't know like, is everything in the red zone like just immediately vaporized or no, it's not. It turns out it's just like bombs just fall like randomly and you could be caught in it and you could not.
That was a really intense moment though.
Yeah. That was really fun.
Yeah.
It's a really like, enjoyable game. You know, there's also... There's a lot of downsides of the game too. Specifically, a lot of waiting. You know, like so much waiting in between matches. I'm not sure.
I don't know if there's a good way to communicate to people in the lobby or whatever, but it's like in that downtime, it would be really nice to be able to chat with each other and stuff, which you can do in Steam or if you use Discord or something. But the, what do you call it? VOIP, the like proximity, like chat or whatever, I think is a big part of the game. Being able to hear.
It is. Yeah. Being able to communicate is crucial. So if you don't have that, then it's really tough to succeed.
But I think having a better in-game chat system or whatever and decreasing load times or giving you something else to do during like wait times or something.
Yeah. It's
like
hard
even
to
booting into the game, the lobby itself is like kind of buggy.
It's slow. Yeah. Really slow. A lot of time spent just like waiting around. So it's really rough around the edges, but man, it's also very exciting and rewarding.
Yeah, those moments really pay off.
Right.
So, anything else you want to add? What games you playing?
Yeah, so I just finished Mario Odyssey this week, and it was like the best game I've played in a very long time. Super fun. I just played it nonstop for like 3 days. Cool. And just finished the story, actually. So I've only got about 160 moons, I think. Out of 800 plus.
And you also just got Zelda, right?
So I finished the story in Mario Odyssey, and then I got Zelda Breath of the Wild and kind of just got into that. And
we've been talking a lot about that.
Yes. I mean, and they're just both so amazing.
So good.
They're both incredible.
Yeah.
They're both so different, too. You know, I'm just, when I play Mario, it all makes sense and it's all clear and it's like tight and easy to understand. And in Zelda, I feel like I'm just like lost in this giant world. I'm just like, where do I go? I'm just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So yeah, it takes.
Go to the tower, look around you, see if you see any shrines and plot a course.
Yeah.
And maybe get a little lost on the way.
Right.
Find a horse you want to catch or something.
Yeah. Like, but damn, super impressed with the Switch.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of just, it was an impulse purchase entirely. Mario came out and Mario was getting like 10 out of 10 reviews everywhere. And I was just like, fuck it, I'm just going to go buy it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not something I plan on doing. But it's...
Seems like it was well worth
I can't say I regret it. You know, I mean, we're in Chengdu. It's November now. You know, it's kind of getting cold. It's getting dark. It's kind of gray outside. And I'm just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to buy it. Like,
yeah. Stay home and like play some more games.
Yeah. I mean, it's the season to do that kind of stuff. You know,
totally.
I bought a PlayStation 3 for GTA 4. Oh, sorry, GTA 5.
Yeah.
In exactly these circumstances. It was like late fall in Chengdu. GTA 5 had come out. The reviews were stellar. I didn't have a PlayStation 3. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to buy a PlayStation 3 and GTA 5.
PS4, right?
No, PS3, yeah.
Yeah, I just bought GTA 5 in the sale. I'll finally play it.
I had a conversation with someone about that recently. And I was like, I think it was Leon, maybe? Anyway, I was like... Yeah, Austin hasn't played GTA 5. They're like, oh my God, man. I was like, yeah, that's right. He's about to experience that.
Yeah. Get this computer built in the next few weeks. That'll be exciting. I got some games I really want to... I'm looking forward to finally playing.
It's a brilliant game.
Yeah. So for me, I've got some games I got coming up to play. I've been taking a break from Zelda for the last week and a half or so for PUBG. I think I've been playing a little bit more than you. Few nights at the Wongba near my house, and I got this game Slayaway Camp, which I think you got as well in the Halloween sale. Pretty fun puzzle game, kind of
totally.
Like simple, straightforward. I like the sound effects and the like design, so that's fun. And when I was waiting for some stuff to like for people to play PUBG and stuff, I've been playing Strafe again at the Wongba. Strafe is a lot of fun. I've gotten like finally gotten to like World 3 or something.
I've been really trying to get to World 3 in Heavy Bullets. I've been playing that like sometimes. That game is really fun.
Oh man, maybe we should both see if we can beat that. The game's hard.
Oh my
game's
God.
Hard.
There's like 8 levels, man.
Yeah.
Like, that seems like impossibly hard. It seems like Spelunky hard. Just like ridiculous hard.
Or FTL hard. How much time did we put into FDL? We spent like a month trying to beat that or something.
Like 35 hours is how long it took me. But I mean, that's like very doable. I mean, I don't know. When I play Heavy Bullets and I can't get that far. And I can see like how much farther there's to go. I'm like 8 levels. I'm like, Jesus, man. I can't
feel
even
like
get
a
to the
big
third
component
level.
Of it is like playing and knowing you're going to die and like buying the life insurance policies and saving money in the bank so that like subsequent runs get better and better until you get to a chance like that one run. But like, that's the only way I see it as possible. I don't think anybody can beat that game on like one of their first playthroughs, you know? I just don't think it's possible without having like saved up stuff from prior runs.
Yeah, I mean, having played, you know, Darkest Dungeon and Cuphead and 20XX and like some difficult games, I feel like Heavy Bullets is just like, it's crazy hard.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
Well, thanks a lot for listening to this podcast. You can check out more episodes of the podcast on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher, or you can download them or stream them directly from our website at chundugaming.com. Thanks for listening. If you have any comments or questions, you can get in touch with us through our website on our WeChat group. And we will catch you next time.
Thanks. Later.